You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Airplane, or I always mess this up. Have you noticed my openings always start like in the last like couple openings of the show?
Kind of like the rest of the show?
Yeah, it's just kind of gone down the toilet.
No, I haven't actually. I don't know what you're talking about.
I was gonna start saying the airport is buzzing with airplanes right now. I see plenty of citations and something with winglets. I can't see it.
Where I can see you?
A winglet.
I don't see a winglet. Where are you? Where are you looking at winglets?
Well, I'm looking at a reflection.
Oh, okay. Let me move my chair here.
From your vantage point there. What is that?
That is a Hawker.
A Hawker?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's a little beach jet. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It is very cool.
I can kind of see the paint scheme. It looks neat.
Yeah, white with a little royal blue, then kind of a deep blue, and then a gold stripe down the middle.
Nice.
And it says Hawker.
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 Beechcraft.
We're in a weird mood, aren't we?
Yeah.
This is kind of a weird show. I can tell it already. I'm looking outside. It's daylight. Why is that?
Well, this is another one of those pre-recorded shows.
Oh, come on. Stop. You mean I'm not really here on Sunday night?
Well, you're probably, yeah. So looking into the future, you're probably, I don't know. You'll be at home.
I'll be at home. Yeah. I'll be at home pushing buttons, making this thing broadcast live. No, it's daytime, and it's like not quite the middle of the week, the latter part of the week. But you're going to be in Chile.
Yeah. So it's going to be fun. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be around to be here live. But, well, I'm glad we're getting this done now.
Yeah, and you stranded me last week. We did wave at you upon rotation on the... You're King Air. We were waving. There's Al.
I wiggled the
show
is
about to start. You wiggled the ailerons?
Did you see it?
I saw the wingtip touch the ground. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Hey, look at that beacon. Is that Cessna taxis on the ramp? That's a pretty bright beacon.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at the guy on left downwind there for 3-4.
Nice.
It's a jet.
I like this.
It's a jet.
I kind of like the little daytime. The matinee
version.
Yeah,
you know what? We
kind of
do this.
Radio.
Let's do this as a play-by-play.
Yeah.
And there he goes. He's taxiing. He cuts left on Lima 2. Cuts right on 3-4.
And here comes
he scores.
Oh my God.
I got to show you what I got. We should hook this up. You'll be so impressed with what I got. Oh, shit.
Oh, man.
I mean, oh, I can be. I'm sorry. That was unintended.
Wow.
How embarrassing.
This
I didn't say that.
This is a really weird show.
This is, yeah.
We must be in a free dive off the Grand Canyon or something like that.
Yeah, watch this. This is going to be so amazing. And I'm going to show them, ladies and gentlemen, a new app I got for my iPad.
Yeah. Whoa, sound effects.
And you just push the button.
Wow, nice.
Booze.
Fails.
Not
choke.
Booze like drinking. Booze like B-O-O-S.
I see.
Laughs.
Pee.
Stop it.
Flush.
Toilet flush. Yeah, I got a whole bunch of them. We have to hook it up, but we'll use them later in the show. Actually, right. I used it a little last week, but
that
you wouldn't know
great.
Because you weren't here.
Yeah.
You abandoned me again.
I'm sorry, but I heard Alex Katulis. I got a lot of tweets saying he did a great job.
He did a great job. I guess once you got an Alex in there, you're okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't matter which Alex it is.
Yeah, right. Well, that's good. So, but, you know, it's actually kind of neat to do the show in the daytime. You get to see a little bit more scurry at the airport and on the ramp.
And scurry is good.
It's a lot of fun. And we're in a little bit different of a conference room today. We got people that are like waving at us. It's awesome.
Who's waving at us?
The general manager right there.
Oh, Al did it.
Signature there. So he did.
Signature Flights. You know, we don't give them enough credit.
We really don't. They are very generous and let us.
They are not only generous, they're great hosts. They provide whatever we need. And in return, all we do is when we buy food, we give them the leftovers.
Yeah.
Exactly. What's with that?
Some cold pizza.
Yeah, or donuts or things like that. But very seriously, this show, we consider Signature Flight Support a big-time partner, and they have been so helpful in multiple cities, but especially here at our home base of Papa Whiskey Kilo.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't think of a better place to do the show from. And you know what's funny is that, remember last week we were setting the show up. I helped set it up, but then I had to take off. And there were some pilots on a layover, and somebody came in, and you know they heard about the Flying Club scholarship and everything. It's kind of a small world. It was neat.
Well, and then after, I don't think I told you, but after that captain came in, her name was Christine,
uh-huh.
Wonderful person. I hope we can keep in contact. But then a gentleman came in that was flying a Challenger, I think. And he, a Canadian company, but he was really into audio stuff.
Yeah.
He asked me what kind of microphones and all this. And it's just so neat to be here because everyone we engage with loves aviation.
Right.
Right. And so we're just sitting here and we meet all kinds of people that aren't even guests on the show. We've got to figure out how to do a little studio audience, bring them in or something.
We need to like roam around Signature and just pull people aside and have them on the live show.
That's right. And by the time the show's on, we'll probably be in jail for accosting people.
Yeah, right.
right.
Exactly. But you know what? Every Sunday night, you end up, you don't accost a joke.
Okay.
You hit it out of the park. You make them shine. That didn't make any sense, did it?
It didn't, not one bit. But I'm with you. You know, right? It just goes with the kind of show that we're already started tonight. I still feel bad that a word came out of my mouth that doesn't normally. It's just I dropped something out of my briefcase and forgot that I was holding onto a microphone.
Yeah. Well, hey, that happens.
Yeah.
That's actually today I was having a discussion about. Here comes a...
It's a beautiful...
Wow,
brand
nice.
New Cirrus.
Brand new Cirrus. Look at that. That's a pretty airplane. We got a Citation. It looks like an Encore taxiing in on the ramp. This is nice. There's a lot of neat... There's just a cool vibe at the airport.
Yeah,
I don't know
always.
What it is.
Always.
And even though the weather is, like, horrible, it's...
It's not horrible.
It's not... It's great flying weather.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's...
got chilly. It was 80s something yesterday, and now it's 40s.
Yeah, and it was pouring rain.
Yeah, I was inside working all day.
So
anyway,
yeah,
you were saying.
Yeah. Squirrel. Anyway, you have a joke tradition that you need to do weekly. I feel empty without it. It's people are... You've got your own hashtag, #SNC.
Sunday Night Chuckle,
yeah. Sunday Night Chuckle. Listen to that thing. And I'm talking about the joke, not that Citation that just pulled up.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny is I didn't do SNC last week, but Alex did one, and it turned out he actually did the joke I'd already done. I didn't have the heart to tell him, and at the end, I finally had to. I said,
"Well, he'll hear it on this show, so let's let him know."
Yeah, I did let him know. I finally told him. But, you know, because we're doing this, I haven't put a lot of planning, just do I admit it? I think I put that out there just in case you don't like the joke. But, there was a pilot. He's flying along and he has a problem with the airplane.
Right.
And he happens to have a parachute in the plane. So he grabs it, puts it on and jumps out of the airplane because it was obvious that the airplane wasn't going to make it.
Right.
And he pulls the ripcord. Nothing happens. He pulls
Yikes.
It. Yeah. Right. And it just, so then he, as he's falling, and they were at very high altitude, you know, in the 20-some thousand feet, pulls it off his back. He's fumbling with it, trying to get more than some shreds of cloth sticking out of the pack. And at just about 5,000 feet, all of a sudden he sees a guy rocketing straight up.
No way.
Straight up vertically. And he yells to him, "Hey, do you know anything about parachutes?" And the guy yells back, "No, do you know anything about stoves?" Oops.
I think he's going to have to find a carpenter to like come patch the hole in his roof.
I guess so. It's something like that. So.
I like that.
Yeah, it's cute. It's cute.
That's a nice one.
I thought you might like it.
Yeah, definitely. Look at all the luggage that they're pulling out of that thing.
You know, I was at a place once. It was in Michigan, and two corporate jets pulled up, and like five people got out of one jet, and the other jet was just their luggage.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Wow.
It was like, and then there were cars waiting, Hummers, Mercedes, SUVs, stuff like that. So I figured these people were definitely living in a different part of town than me.
Yeah. Well, let's. I got a question for you. What kind of airplane would you have to fly your luggage around in?
You know, personally, are you? Is this a right answer, wrong answer? Or what? Just your answer.
No, that's what you know. Obviously,
this was a twin jet. They wanted the same for performance. But when I think of carrying a load, if it doesn't have to arrive at the same time, I think a caravan.
Caravan.
Yeah, I just think it has a load carrier.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. You know, so you could, let's say money's no object, you know, and obviously this family went jet shopping and, bought a jet for their, two jets. One for their bodies and then one for their clothes that would cover them, I guess.
Yep.
And, you would have to send the caravan days in advance.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're asking me what plane, I mean, I'd love to have a G5 and I wouldn't need a second plane.
Right.
Right? Because it's just me and my luggage.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I was, let's talk about this in Hangar Talk, actually. Like it. It's, but hold that thought.
I'm holding that thought. I'm, entered a teardrop entry on that.
All right. Excellent. One minute legs. But anyway, I read this interesting article on Twitter today. And it said that let's call it the discount carrier, another discount carrier airline was starting to charge for carry-on bags and drinks. Gone are the complimentary carry-on bags and drinks.
How do you feel
about that?
I think that's stupid.
Why?
I mean, I understand the drinks because they got to pay for it, but the bags. I mean, remember what we had when we had to start paying for the check stuff. The carry-on was at least a way to get around that.
Right.
So what?
No more loopholes.
It's not a loophole. What are you talking about? I mean, if someone comes on, let's say a woman comes on with a purse, they're going to charge her for that?
So anything that goes in the overhead bin, it gets charged a $25 fee. Like a rollerboard suitcase.
So and under the seat is free.
Under the seat is free. Anything on the top rollerboard, anything.
What if I throw my coat in there? A sports coat.
I don't know.
Like a little coin operated thing. Throw $25 in it.
Yeah, let's credit card swipe to open that.
Oh my god, what's the world coming to?
Yeah. So, but then if you check luggage.
I would just rather them, why don't they just charge us $25 more and don't tell us?
Yeah, exactly. So that's going to be this is something that's pretty interesting. I want to get your feel, and I think I've already feel that you don't like this at all.
I think it's rotten. Again, don't tell me you're doing it and charge $25 more, although I think that kind of sucks too now that I say it. But anyway, I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, I kind of like it.
You're nuts.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's interesting. I don't know. I kind of see.
Al, you ignorance. Oh, no, that was last 2 weeks ago.
You know, but I don't know. I could see where, yeah, from a money standpoint, it may not work, but from an operational standpoint and maybe an other passenger convenience standpoint, it works.
Tell me more, oh wise one.
So I think that the best I could compare it to is there's an airline out there that's still allows you to check bags for free. And if you go to all the other major carriers, they charge $25. It seems like that's a standard.
Unless you're a frequent flyer.
Yeah, unless you're a frequent flyer, but, you know, still, you know, that's just still kind of a strange thing to me. But, anyway, so if you go on this one airline that still allows free check bags, if you're the last guy on, which often I am, you know, just through, like, you know, I show up at the airport late or I don't know what it is, but if you're the last one on, it's stressful getting on because you're worried about overhead bin space. Now on this one particular airline, since they don't charge for checked luggage, they end up, you know, if you're the last guy on, you don't have to worry about finding a spot for your bag because there's plenty of overhead bin space left. But if you go on one of the other major carriers that charges for luggage, if you're the last guy on, you're hosed.
Well, no, they just plain side check it and that works out. Although, yeah, but you know what? That happened to me coming back from New York.
Yeah.
And I was like group three because I wasn't on my normal airline.
Right.
And so I said, okay, LaGuardia to O'Hare. They said, well, grab it at the door. And I said, fine, I'll pick it up plain side. They said, no, you won't.
Yeah.
You'll pick it up on regular baggage claim. I thought, oh, I'm going to be there all day. By the time I got there, it had beaten me to the carousel. So it actually worked out.
Well, that's nice. Like winning the baggage, you know, claim lottery. You know?
Yeah, I haven't checked a bag in so many years. I didn't know what to expect, but it was actually a pleasant experience, and I didn't have to carry it with me. So I actually enjoyed it, but they didn't charge me, of course, because...
Yeah, see, I mean, I think that's nice. I'm a fan. I was one, I'll be honest. I was one of those people that ended up checking a bag, you know, plain side checking it, going to baggage claim just so I didn't have to pay the fee. But now, you know, I don't know. I think that very... Yeah, let's call it, for lack of a better term, you know, that very action puts a lot of stress on the gate agents. They end up getting very stressed out about making sure that all the bags are tagged, all the bags that could possibly be plain side checked beforehand get out there and, you know, are taken and loaded. And, you know, it leaves the ticket counter at the gate empty. So people with, you know, itinerary problems or, you know, seating concerns. It's, you know, where's the gate agent? Oh, they're around the gate, you know.
Well, they have things to do. You know, I don't know. It just seems to me that I think I've said this before, you know, two kinds of problems in this world, yours and mine, and I don't care about yours. You know, that's, the airlines kind of reap what they sow and they want to cut this and cut that and charge for that, then they better staff up to handle the fallout.
Right.
Right? And that, so we just follow the rules, we as passengers, and they need to staff accordingly.
So as a passenger, you do not like the added bag fee?
No, I you know, I'm a pragmatist. I understand businesses need to pay for their costs and put a profit on top of that.
Right.
I don't think airlines particularly are good business people.
Right.
Some things are out of their control, but they're playing the wrong game. Look at, and this is maybe not fair, but look at Surf Air, right? We interviewed...
That was a good interview.
Yeah, Wade a couple months ago or something, and he saw the option to change things. Now, he's not playing in the 121 world, so it's not fair comparison, but I guess I'm saying there's a way to organize and run a business that creates customer satisfaction.
Right. I would definitely agree with that. Now, but on the other side of the coin, I think that as a passenger, you know, I feel good about this because now, you know, the cabins are going to be freed up a little bit. You know, the overhead bin space, it's going to provide a less stressful, you know, a less stressful event of boarding. And, you know, if you have a item that you legitimately want to put in the overhead bin and you're one of the, you know, in the last half of the plane to board, you know, you at least have a fighting chance of, you know, being able to put it in an overhead bin.
So let's actually start to analyze this. If you look at the check bag fee, how much is that?
25.
No, check bag fee. Is it 25?
Yeah.
So it's 25 whether you bring it on or not.
Right.
I thought it was 50 to, I'm, could
well,
be wrong.
Well, let's, you know, the general number is 25.
Okay.
Some may
let's
charge
go with
more,
that.
Some, yeah, so 25.
So there's no advantage. I guess I think in the old days when there was no fees, we didn't check bags because we didn't want someone handling it and tearing my bag apart, and I didn't want to wait on the other end. So I don't understand if it's both $25, how that's going to change behavior.
Well, I think that if it's a bag that you're avoiding to check and you're going to have to pay it regardless, then the person, you're going to check it at the gate. You're going to check it at the ticket counter when you first check in before you go through security. So now think about that. It opens up, there's less bags to screen, so security might move faster. Boarding will be quicker because not as many bags are going to be going in the cabin.
You know what? You're absolutely right if people choose that. But again, listen to what I just said. When there was no fee, so it costs the same, zero, to put it on or not, people still chose to go out, take it with them through security and put it on the airplane because they wanted access to it when they got to the destination without having to go to baggage claim. So if you really want to do that, then charge more to bring it on than it is to check it. And that will drive it. Charge $50.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. This airline has another interesting policy that if you plane side check a bag, so the difference between plane side checking a bag and like putting something in the overhead. So if you plane side check a bag, it's $100. So it's almost as a punishment for not checking it before you went through security.
Oh my goodness. And maybe I'm a victim of getting a routine or getting a rut, but it just seems backwards to me.
It kind of does. I think that's a little harsh, but you know what? If I had to plane side check a bag, you know, and it cost me $100 or something like that, you know, they're basically going after the people like me, the person that brought their bag to avoid the fee, and now they have to plane side check it, and now it's like, okay, yeah, that's going to sting a little. So what would I rather pay, $100 or the $25?
But what if it's their fault? I didn't want to check it. You're just telling me it's full.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, like that happened to me at LaGuardia, but I didn't have to pay.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. It's they're nickel and diming us. I'm a little disappointed in them charging for the drinks, but again, at least they're using up a product for that. If they could just tell me that the tickets were going to come down, like Ryanair, I've never flown them. But my son, when he was studying abroad, he was, when he was studying abroad, he basically could fly in a 747 for $25, and he wore his backpack and didn't have to check anything. And they nickel and dime, but it's so cheap to get in there.
Right.
So if we did that, right, and the airline says, okay, it's $50. Oh, you want a drink? You want a salted peanuts? You want to use the bathroom? I wouldn't care. As long as that baseline price was significantly less and they were just charging for usage. It's like a user fee.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I kind of go both ways on that. It's like,
I heard that about you. I'm sorry. It's a weird day.
Wow. That's...
Where's my little?
Oh, but yeah. So anyway, I don't know. I think it could improve. In order to improve the customer experience or the passenger experience, it may have to go down for some. You know, the passenger experience will deplete by that. You know, and I guess it's aimed for people like me, but.
Sorry, I had to do that.
I like it. You're going to have fun with that little soundboard, I can tell. Yes, we got laughing. I think that citation that's firing up right next to our window sounds a little bit better. Yeah. You know what? Who you're going to be, your nickname's going to be?
Mr. Sound Effects?
Professor Andy.
Professor Andy?
Yeah, do you remember Professor Andy?
No.
What?
The comedian, Andy.
I feel like I'm like, I always like let you down every time I don't remember something from like, oh, did you remember this? Do you remember that?
Well, no. I'm surprised when you do know. Right? Well, yeah. Do you remember Howdy Doody in the 50s? You can't know that, right?
Yeah. The dummy.
It's Howdy Doody time.
Yeah. But no, you, Professor Andy, who was like the musician guy on the Bozo Circus.
And I know Bozo Circus really well because my son was on it and did Bozo Buckets.
Are you serious?
Yeah, the grand prize game. I'll bring in a video once we recorded him.
Did he get Matt's chocolate chip cookies?
He's got Archway cookies. They were great. They were absolutely phenomenal. And he was 4 years old at the time. we're digressing, but I got to do this. So all of a sudden I hear he's going that his friend's mom or his friend's grandmother tried to get tickets. It was like a 10-year wait, and they came through, and she just took a bunch of friends. They were free. And he was four. We had never really done much. And wow. So before I left for work, I said, if they pick you for this game, this is how you throw the ball.
Yeah.
Because he threw overhand, and I showed him underhand.
Yeah.
And so I go to work. I come home, and then I see Transformer sets and Archway cookies in this play. I go, oh, my God. And then I see a picture of him and Bozo in front of Bozo buckets.
Wow.
I can't believe they called his number.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah. So
on the grand prize game.
On the grand prize game. What's your name?
Jason Eppner.
What would be the aviation version of Bozo Buckets?
Sky King?
No, just a game. Is there an aviation game?
No.
A version of, like, you know, an equivalent to Bozo Buckets?
No, but you know what? I think we ought to create a board game about aviation. You stop at FBOs.
Yeah. You get put in a holding pattern.
Hey, this is on the radio show. I probably just blew it, but we're going to create one.
Put it in a holding pattern and stuff like that? Oh, that's
Airportopoly or something like that.
Yeah. I like it. Awesome. Well,
there's the sun.
The sun. See? Absolutely. The sun is cueing us.
Do, 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 do.
To introduce our guest tonight.
We have a guest tonight?
We do.
Talk to me, baby.
Well, he's actually a really good friend of both yours and mine, and a familiar face around here at the Chicago Executive Airport. And his name is Mr. Kirk Michon. You know Kirk.
I know Kirk very well.
Yeah.
Great guy, member of the board at Leading Edge Flying Club.
Yes, sir. We'll just, so anyway, he's kind of got a really cool mission. One thing about Kirk that I don't think a lot of people know is that he's very passionate about, you know, making the things that, you know, making things that he's involved at a lot better. You know, hence why he's on the board of directors.
Yeah,
at the
I sense that. I like his pride.
Right. He has a lot of pride. And, well, in the community that he lives in, near, Palwaukee here, he's on the Historical Society board, and he's actually taken on this really cool project of finding an airplane that his community and the community high school in the town sponsored during World War II.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's actually kind of like been this like private investigator, detective type thing. You know,
Kirk P.I.
Yeah, Kirk P.I. And he finally found the airplane, but he's trying to figure out how to get a piece of it back for his
which piece?
His show. Any piece.
Well, we should probably not blow the interview if we're going to give all the answers here.
Yeah, so anyway, it's going to be neat to talk about that with Kirk. So,
yeah.
He is here, and let's talk to him.
All right. Sounds excellent. How you doing, Kirk?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks for inviting me to be on the show tonight.
Our pleasure. This is pretty exciting.
It is.
Yeah. It's not often that we get one of our own to be one of our guests. That's pretty neat.
I like it.
Yeah. It gets rid of that initial, who am I talking to? What's going to happen? We already know we like the guy.
We already did the icebreakers years ago.
Right. Yeah, years ago.
I did get to speak on the show a few months ago, I think. Yeah. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, no, yeah. It was. And do you remember what you were on for?
Yes, I had questions about flight following and whether or not they would clear me through an MOA.
Yeah.
And I think everybody chuckled or something. And
I laughed out loud.
I don't think I did. Of course, I don't even remember. Of course, I don't remember what we did last week, let alone last month or the month before that.
Well, I just got one of the AOPA magazines at home, and one of the little sidebars this month was, are you cleared to fly through an MOA or a Class B airspace when you're on flight following? I thought, I'm not the only guy that has those questions.
Was the answer the same one?
No, I think this was a tease to go on to some sort of a webinar.
Tease.
That is a tease.
That is a tease indeed.
Hey, that's good marketing, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, that's why they call them teases.
Aviation marketing at its finest.
A.M. A.I.F.
A.I.M.F.
A.M.
A.I.F.
A.I.F.
Yeah.
Let's not even go here.
Yeah, let's not. This is all about Kirk tonight and the cool project that he's taking on.
What's the they keep talking about? Talk about a tease.
Yeah, this is a tease. Now this is aviation marketing at its finest. So Kirk, why don't you say tell us what we gave a little brief rundown on what you're kind of doing, but give us a thorough rundown of the last couple months.
Wow. So we'll just walk away for an hour.
Right.
When we come back, you should be done.
All right. Well, let me see if I can. Where should I start? My interest in this project started when I joined an organization called the Park Ridge Historical Society. It's something that's been around in my town since 1973. And I just joined the group about a year ago, and I heard about, they kept talking about a C-54, and I didn't even know what that was at the time, but the C-54 project, Well, and it turns out that during World War II, a lot of planes were built at the Douglas Aircraft Factory, which at Orchard Airport, which is now O'Hare.
Yep.
So, and while those things were rolling off the assembly line, communities or organizations could sell war bonds to sort of support the effort. So it wasn't unusual that a community or a school or something would try to do this. And one of those groups was in Maine Township. So Park Ridge is adjacent to Maine Township. At the time, there was only one high school in Maine Township, and that's what's now known as Maine East High School in our area.
I'm getting regular history lesson here. This is pretty cool.
I got to lay the groundwork for you.
No, yeah, absolutely. This is perfect.
So I'll get even more specific. Mm-hmm. So in December of 1944, December 1st, actually, the students at Maine East High School were challenged to sell war bonds for this effort. And their initial goal was $300,000 of war bonds.
Oh, my goodness.
By the 16th of December, they'd sold $500,000 worth of war bonds. And that was the amount you had to sell in order to get your name put on one of these planes that rolled off the assembly line.
Wow.
So,
I'm going to say 300 in 1944.
Think about how many, I'm trying to measure that in baseball cards.
I'm trying to measure that in billions of dollars, what it'd be worth today.
Yeah, based on inflation, that's a big number.
It's a huge number. And for high school kids to raise and sell it, that's
phenomenal. In a few weeks, they did this.
I mean, that's.
What was the time span again?
December 1st to December 16th.
And they raised $500,000?
Sold $500,000 worth of war bonds.
Jeez. It was a patriotic world.
How did they have to sell them? Did they sell them to the family or to the community?
Yeah, these are things you'd go door to door, like our kids today sell candy or wrapping paper. They were selling war bonds. I mean, it was just a whole different era, you know, the whole country was into this. I mean, so it probably wasn't maybe as hard to sell one of these as you might think. Somebody knocked on your door, and I'm not even sure what the face amount of these things were and how many separate war bonds that represented, but in total, a big number.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, 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 is indeed.
So this is in December of 1944, and the plane that ended up getting the Maine Township name on it was actually ordered in 1942. That's when it was put into production. And it was ordered by I'm not even sure it was the Air Force at that time, it was the USAAF. Maybe one of you guys knows what that was, the precursor to what we know as the U.S.
Well, I know what the U.S. stands for in the last AF.
I don't know what that middle one is.
Allied Air Forces. I don't know, something like that.
I don't know off the top of my head. I have to look that up.
But it was spec'd out for the Air Force, and it was delivered to the Navy, though, actually, in the spring of 1945. And on the nose of the plane, it says, and I actually have this here. I have a photograph. That doesn't work well in radio, but
we'll get a little picture of it.
It says faster and higher. That's Maine's flyer.
Nice.
And then there were dignitaries present, and kids from the school got to go, and this thing rolled off the assembly line. It was delivered on March 8th, 1945.
Our studio audience, just by the way, said it's United States Army Air Force.
I knew somebody would know that.
Well, let's see the news article on this. This thing is not a small airplane.
No, it's a large. It's a four-engine plane that was this plane was outfitted to be a hospital troop ship. It was to move people. But again, being delivered on March 8th, 1945, it only saw service for a few months before the war was over.
Right. So do you know what the C-54 is and what it was or who it was built by? Or no, you said it.
Douglas.
Right? Yeah, Douglas. And then it was a, do you know what the conversion is into, civilian?
Is that a DC-7 or something? Yeah, that's what I was looking to,
do you know, Al?
Yes, it's like a DC-6, I believe. C-54. Yeah, in the military. Or so, yeah, so it would be a DC-6.
Okay, I don't know. I kind of.
Yeah.
I know DC-9.
I just kind of derailed the conversation. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. There's that pilot ADD stuff going on again. Squirrel!
I think actually a lot of these planes, they flew the hump, the C-54, you know, over in China. That was the thing that was going over the mountains. So they were doing a lot of work. I mean, they were just workhorse machines. But again, ours didn't last long because the war was shortly
over.
That's
a good thing.
So, yeah. But it remained in the service until 1971. And then it was decommissioned and kind of turned over to civilian life. And that's when it's got an N number.
Right.
And that's where.
Was it an N number or an NC number?
No, it was an N number. And I'm actually going to give this N number. I'm going to do it more than once because at the end of the tonight, I'm hoping somebody might be able to help us, learn more about this aircraft. But it was given the registration number of, N44910. 44910. And actually we know who the firm that purchased it, was an outfit called Biggert Aviation, and they were firefighters. They use these planes for aerial firefighting. And we have we don't know if this plane ever got outfitted that way, but at least that's the organization that, that owned it right after the, you know, 1971. Ultimately this thing got purchased by a guy up in Alaska.
Nice.
Brooks Aviation. And I actually have, exchanged emails with Roger Brooks, the current owner, I think, of whatever's left of this aircraft. But he used these planes to haul fuel into communities in northern Alaska. So, I mean, this was rough work and, you know, I can't imagine what kind of strips they were flying into.
So if you were going to run into this airplane in the woods, it'd be like Paul Bunyan, you know. With a beard all and flannel shirts and a real workhorse.
Well, I don't think it would be all waxed and clean. You know, this would be, I mean, probably sticks sticking out of the bottom on some short runways and things like that.
Yeah.
But again, now that's what these planes were used for, but we have reason to believe that this one ended up in Chandler, Arizona. And there was an airport, Chandler Memorial Airport, and it became the resting place for a lot of plane carcasses. They ended up storing them there because of the weather.
Right.
But so, someone in Alaska said, oh, the weather, let me take it down to Chandler, Arizona. I mean, how does that come about?
I think what happened was he was using these planes heavily in Alaska, and when he could get another one or had an extra, he'd leave it down in Chandler and use it for parts. So when they needed something up in Alaska, they'd come down and cannibalize one of the...
You know, Al, I'm just sitting here wondering, why wouldn't someone, like, put it in some place in California? Why go all the way down to Arizona for your parts?
Some people do. I mean, they put them in the Mojave Desert.
I'm just thinking, why go so many miles when it's kind of, like, right there? I don't know. Obviously, they did, though, right? So it's just the explanation is not clear in my head, but it's what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sounds like it's a dry, it's a lot better having it sit down there than, probably up in Alaska, you know, rusting away or something.
Right.
Right. Yep.
Oh, definitely. No, I think you want dry conditions, you know, very little humidity just for the preservation of them.
Yeah, I always say, it's hot down there, but it's dry heat. Yeah, stick your head in the oven. That's pretty dry heat too, but anyway, I digress.
Well, and oddly enough, we knew what the N number of this plane, knew something about its history from some of the people that remembered it. But I went online last year and I Google searched this N number, and I was surprised at how quickly, in the same day, I probably got four responses from people around the world responding when I Googled it, I'd see a picture of it and there would be a copyright or someone's name. And I just sort of worked backwards to figure out who did that. sent off an email, and very quickly these people would get back to me and say, oh yeah, I'm an aviation buff and I take pictures of old aircraft wherever I am. And
yeah,
so I've
right.
got two or three of your plane. I'll send them to you.
Wow.
You know, and just very quickly, I had photographs of it. And a lot of people were offering the same thing. I mean, everybody seemed to have the story about how it was built and when it was built. So you were able to kind of corroborate that.
Was anybody familiar with it being a war bond airplane?
No, that part, these people didn't seem to know. That probably was outside of the channels. They could somehow look up the when it was commissioned, you know, when it rolled off the assembly line and all that. They knew those kind of dates, but I don't think they knew the history of the town getting its name on it.
Did you, so when you were, you know, doing all this like PI work for this airplane, did you tell people about the story behind it and why you were doing it?
I did. I thought that would help my mission. So I would explain who I was, why I was looking for the plane. And ultimately what we've been trying to do is to get to see actually what's left of it, you know, to actually physically stand before this thing with a Sawzall and, you know, cut a window out of it, take the yoke home. I don't know. We're trying to find some piece of it if it still exists and bring it back to Maine Township.
Now, where is it designated on the airplane that it was a war bond and that it was associated with Maine West High School?
At the time, the only thing we have are those photographs that exist from the yearbook of the class of 1945. At Maine Township High School, there's a photograph of the airplane, and we have press clippings from the time that show the what was written on the nose.
So that's my question. So something was written on the nose, so if you find this airplane on the nose, it'll say Maine Township
that,
High School.
We believe that's been removed at this point. So that might have been on there during its service in the military, but again, in 1971, it went into civilian life, and it might have come off then. And I don't think it was on there at anything more recent.
So from 44 to 71, it was in the military.
Yes.
Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
And we don't really know what it was used for during all that time. That's just sort of a blank. We believe it was a hospital, again, outfitted to move medical troops. But then we don't really know what happened from, let's say, 46 to 71.
Can we get the logbook?
Well, maybe that's out there in the desert.
We can't get the airplane, but we can get the logbook. That'd still be pretty cool.
I'm sure that if the plane still exists, well, I'm not going to say I'm sure, but.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if the pilots in 44 were going to put all the stuff on the internet or not.
Why wouldn't they?
Maybe they didn't have their laptop with them.
But I'm talking like we haven't ever seen this.
So Mark got a new sound.
Hand me a toy. Sound effects.
Oh. When I say something good, put the clap on or something. Thank you. We do have pictures. I mean, we've seen photographs. These people that got back to me on, you know, through the internet sent me photographs, and half the plane is missing. So someone cut it in half.
Not just for parts. Somebody probably put it into the living room.
Yeah, we don't know what happened to it. So this Chandler Memorial Airport,
yeah,
which you can still look up.
I'm going to do that right now.
At some point in the last decade, it became the Gila River Memorial Airport. So there's an Indian reservation just southeast of Chandler.
Right.
And it is now on the Indian reservation property, this airfield, and any aircraft that are still on there, supposedly when this became the Indian reservation, people were notified, remove your property from this field or it's going to be ours forever, you know, and a fence was erected around the
what's
airfield.
Do you have the airport designator? I'm opening my little four flight here, or what's it called now?
Well, now it's Gila, which is G-I-L-A. River Memorial Airport.
Yep, I found it. That would be 34 Alpha Zulu. Got its what, four things.
Wow.
And I think it'll say it's private, and you know, it's not a
Chandler, Arizona. Flight rules unknown. Okay, no approaches. Let's see. I can't even see where it says that it's Unicom 122.8. But anyway, this is cool. All right. It's got a 5,200 foot long by 200 foot wide runway, poor asphalt, at 321 and 1230 is 8560 by 75. Good asphalt. Right traffic. It doesn't say private, at least what I'm looking at. Let's fly down there.
Well, that's sort of my goal. I've been trying to talk somebody into flying down there, but then the problem is we have to get out onto the property, and it's definitely not public to where someone can walk out onto it.
34AZ. Hilo. This is a big airport.
Yeah, that's what I say. It's 200 foot wide, but it says it runway 321 badly deteriorated. Road crosses at end of runway. This is interesting. I'm getting into this, Kirk.
Well, and this used to be called the Chandler Memorial Airport. So, you know, you can also look that up.
Yeah. So there's the Chandler. It's right next to the Class Delta and then the Stellar Steeler Air Park, P-19. And it's all right there. I wonder, this is a cool project.
Yeah.
Well, and so what we've tried to do is I looked in probably what you're looking up at some point, and there was an airport manager named. So I reached out to him and never heard back. Somehow I got a hold of the man who is the editor of the reservation newspaper. And I told him what our mission was. And he got kind of excited, and he even said, good luck with that. And maybe we could even do a story about it down here. I mean, he thought it was a cool story. But he has been unable to date to get me to the right person that could actually, you know, unlock the door so that if I was there or someone was there that we could actually go out and again.
But if you landed on the runway, it's already there, right? It's not like behind locked doors.
Right. But you can't land on the runway because it's private and it all spotted the private.
Yeah.
I see where it says private on the actual VFR sectional.
I guess we could claim we ran out of fuel or something. Emergency.
Declare an emergency. Yeah, that would be something else.
And I thought PVT stand for primary vectors too.
Oh.
Yeah, right.
No, that's a laugh.
No, but seriously, so the last person that you talked to, he got pretty excited and he kind of wants to help, right?
Right.
And then but trying to find the access to the right person, you know, to find the person that has the key to get into the airport, that's kind of difficult.
Right. And that's what we're trying to get to the bottom of. And I do have a name of someone, but that person in the last 2 weeks I've been unable to get. And when I say trying to get a hold of them, it's mainly through emails. I don't have a phone number. The newspaper editor gave me an email address and a name and said, contact this person. So I reached out to him, but haven't heard back.
So how long have you been on this search?
I started this all last April.
So we're a year into this, a year and a month, and it almost seems to me, wait a minute, how come you couldn't have like determined within the first 30 days that, okay, I got the information, or I can't. And so it's been a slow process, relatively speaking, even in today's fast data world.
Well, that's true. And I think it's like, it's like a part-time job. So,
right, sure.
I guess I've been reluctant to try to figure out how to get out there and really just be standing at a fence and not getting out. You know, I'm trying to work this from afar, and maybe I do just have to get out there and spend a day or two and, you know, try to track somebody down. I mentioned before the show that my father had been out vacationing a week ago in the Phoenix area, and he actually tried to reach these people, and he drove around the airfield, and he took some pictures from a distance. He didn't know which one was our aircraft, but so he got kind of close. It was kind of exciting to have somebody nearby.
Hey, look at this. So I'm on Google Maps satellite.
What's it going to do?
It's sitting right here.
So how many airplanes are on the field?
I think a fair amount. It's like a boneyard out there, you know.
Because how will you know which one it is at that point?
The tail number is still on it from the photographs we have.
Right. Let's see. It looks like a lot of these airports are kind of closed, or the runways are closed.
Well, the long one is badly deteriorated. Do you see any airplanes
there?
That
one's closed. Yeah.
Does it look like Megs with the X's
on
them?
So we have a, it does have X's. I don't know how you would land here. Looks really, really in rough shape. But I would say that this is probably probably the airplane.
Well, you said there's only half of an airplane left. That's a full airplane.
They cut it in half?
Yeah, didn't that what you said, Kirk?
Yeah, there you go. There's.
Is that it?
See?
That's the picture?
That this is, I just Googled the tail number, so you could look through there and see several different shots of that.
Oh, it doesn't have a tail. It's halfway down the tail. And it's
wait. I
did
think
you
I
find it?
Yeah, so we had
found it.
Which one is it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the one up there. The other ones they left to keep the tail. That one had a very special tail. They wanted to take that one
so
off.
So there it is.
So that's what I think that's why I thought maybe
cool
I could get
this?
A yoke out of it or something.
Yeah, we could get a yoke. Yeah, I think this is a pretty cool project. Even just sitting here, you know, if the listeners are probably like, okay, what's all the dead silence all about? But no, so we have our iPads out right now looking at it and, at this airport on Google Maps, the satellite version. And if you see this airplane, it's kind of parked in a row. There's four airplanes and, it's the one with its tail cut off.
And part of the left wing.
Yeah. And part of the left wing.
And
that's pretty amazing.
This is very amazing. So I'm into this now, Kirk. I want to help you find
it. Well, that's
why
I was hoping that if I came on and talked about it, we'd get some.
So there's that plane. So now we're on Google Images looking this up and there is a,
they've taken the nacelles off
what's
too.
What's the tail number again?
44910.
44910. If you Google that under images, right?
Right.
It'll show up and it looks like it's missing its tail, part of its wing. And you can see it, one of them, here's a cluster of four airplanes.
Yeah, it matches up perfectly.
Yeah, it matches up nicely. This has gotta be it.
I feel Sherlock Holmes here or something.
Well, and the email that I was trying to get hold of Roger Brooks of Brooks Fuel, who was the last known owner of this aircraft. I got a hold of his son. So it could have been one of the fellows in Belgium said, I don't know Roger's email, but I know his son's email. So I tell the son who I am. And he says, oh, I'm sure my dad would like to talk to you. So he forwards my email to his dad. And Roger Brooks sends me an email and says, yep, I'm the current owner of that plane. And when the airport became private, we were told to remove it and we couldn't get down there. And they won't let us on now, but if there's any way you can find out a way to get on that airport, you can take whatever's left. I mean, so I have sort of an okay from the.
I just think it's interesting. He owns an airplane that has one wing and no tail.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe you can get something for it on eBay.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
No, so this is cool. I mean, there's so many aspects to the story. One, it's historical. Two, it's like private investigator kind of stuff, you know, like, okay, here it is on Google Images and Google Earth satellite. You can see it just sitting there. I mean, it's not going anywhere.
Right. It doesn't even have a propeller on it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have an engine to sell.
And we don't know what's on the inside either. There might be nothing left. But what if there was an engine instrument? Because here's the other thing. We're trying to create a cultural facility in Park Ridge, Illinois, and we would love to have a piece of that airplane, some part of it that we could bring back and talk about. In fact, on May 18th, we're having an oral history day. We're calling it an oral history day where we're inviting members of that class of 1945 and any others that we could find around it to come and speak to current students. So, we've invited students from the three local high schools. And ultimately, what we'd like to do is record the memories of the people that were a part of this.
I was telling Al just before you arrived in the studio tonight that I was seeing a news story in the last couple weeks of a time capsule, and I do not remember the city or state, but it was a church somewhere, I think, in Oklahoma that 100 years ago buried a time capsule, and they opened it up, and they were going over this stuff. And to me, that was so cool. And so now it's not 100 years, but 1944 to have someone that was, I remember when I sold so many war bonds, you know.
Well, and listen to this. We found, because we have the yearbook, the high school yearbook, there was a young woman at the time who was with the dignitaries the day that plane rolled off, and she's named in there. We found out where she is. She lives in a retirement home in Lake Geneva.
Oh, no kidding.
Wisconsin. So a couple of members of the club drove up there to interview her. She was the number one seller. That was why she got to sit up on the dais with the dignitaries. And so we were asking her if she could remember that. And,
And it was just, it was very neat, you know, to be talking to this
and
young.
And she remembered and
she did. I mean, and now she's probably 88 years old or something. So some of the things don't, you know, she, maybe we thought she'd be more excited about, do you remember what it was like to be, you know, a teenager during the war and everybody working together? And I'm not sure she was as excited as we were about,
right,
you know, what it had been like back then. But, it was just, it was neat to see her. We were showing her the yearbook that we had with her picture in the yearbook. And then even crazier was, another woman from the same yearbook on the same page lives in the same retirement place, five doors down, and they didn't even know they were both there.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
So we kind of put these two people together. So that was kind of an emotional scene.
Well, you know, one of the other things that kind of is going through my head right now is I have a brother that's really big into genealogy. And what I'm thinking is airplane genealogy.
Right.
History of airplanes and where their lineage is, where'd they come from, who owned them, all of those things that we don't think about very much, but there's something really neat about it. Matter of fact, I'm going to go back tonight after we're done. I'm going to go look at my first logbook and look up all the airplanes I soloed in. I got my private pilot license in. And see where they are these days.
Well, now you got to start taking a camera with you and take pictures of planes that you see and write those down in the notes in your logbook.
So maybe what I need to do is take a wing off or an engine off.
Yeah, so that way when you're looking at it on Google Earth, you can identify.
Yeah, that one's got an engine. Birthmark. Yeah, that's in my backyard.
No, this is neat. I think that there's this is a subject or a topic that you really don't ever hear anything about. So, you know, the another thing that's really cool about the story is that you're trying to rally a community behind it. You know, so how would you plan on rallying a community around this, you know, when this was worth, you know, $500,000 worth of war bonds? You know, what kind of value is this going to add to the community, do you think?
Well, I think our, obviously, as being part of a historical society, we used to have a house in town that had the velvet ropes and a bed from the old days and an old washing machine. So it was like more like, right, a museum.
Yeah.
And now we felt that something like this is more of a living thing. You know, this is, there are still people around that were a part of that.
Right.
We don't know that young people today have any idea what it meant, what it was like to rally as a community for this common goal.
Right.
You know, everybody seems to be on their own these days. So that's why we're trying to get the principals at these local high schools to get current students to come and listen to these people and hear about it. And I just think that's it. It's like keeping a memory alive, but it's talking about a time when things were much different. But a community was really together. And,
right.
I wonder how much that would resonate with kids. I know I did not like history when I was in high school. And Al, you and I talked earlier about seeing the Forum in Rome and how that, you know, gave us goosebumps. And as I've gotten older, I don't know if it's because now I think of my childhood as history, but thinking of everyone's history means a lot more to me. And that's why even 1944, I wasn't even alive, but I'm excited to hear what was going on in someone's mind and things like that.
Well, I think of today, again, my children are selling wrapping paper to, so they can go on a field trip or something.
Right.
I mean, so again, to try to explain to children today, kids today, what they were doing back then.
But I mean,
serious effort.
Do your kids, and your kids are a little bit older, I mean, that in terms of they're not in junior high or...
Right.
Your youngest in high school?
My youngest is in college.
Oh, is in college. Right. So, yeah. So maybe they're a little bit older, but I'm wondering if kids today have an interest in what... In Park Ridge, for instance, do the kids at Park Ridge have any interest in saying that's really cool? Or they go, oh, look at those old people going after this nostalgia thing.
Well, again, I think that the point we're trying to make is not a static exhibit of what life used to be like.
Understood.
That's what we're trying to change, this idea that there have been other neat things that have gone on in Park Ridge and not just things from the late 1800s to show off in an old building with and don't touch, just look and don't touch.
Right. I understand.
You know, I think... and I'm not sure of all the details on this, but I know that Hillary Clinton was supporting an effort to find the Amelia Earhart remains. There are people that are still actively trying to do that.
Hillary's from Park Ridge, right?
And Hillary's from Park Ridge. So again, we're playing up the fact that, you know, there's a little connection to aviation currently where, you know, the former president's wife is supporting this group that's trying to find out what happened to that aircraft. And a little bit of a tie to our community too. So,
right.
You know, what's kind of neat, the more I think about this. Okay. So this airplane was supported by war bonds, right? For the production of it.
The threshold was $500,000 worth of war bonds to have your name put on it.
Right.
I believe the cost of the airplane at the time was much more than that. So you weren't buying the plane.
Actually, right. You said $300,000, but you guys went to $500,000, right?
The records we have said that they thought $300,000 was an achievable goal, and they got to it so quickly that they then changed their sights to the $500,000, which was naming rights threshold.
Oh, I got it.
Right. So still, I mean, even still, that was a tangible result that people could put their name on, right?
Right.
And something to be proud of, that the community could put their name on and be proud of it, you know, whether that money directly went to the production costs or not, you know, or the just what general war effort, who knows. But still, you think about, okay, all the value that it provided in the military for 30 years. But then afterwards, so this guy Brooks that bought the plane, you know, what kind of value did the plane provide to, you know, to northern Alaska, you know?
It was either used, you know, originally maybe as a firefighter,
right,
which obviously has a humanitarian ring to it. I mean,
right.
And then here he was delivering supplies to people in remote parts of Alaska.
Right.
So, yeah.
I think that's pretty cool. You know, just from that aspect too, throughout the life of the airplane, you know, these are time tested machines. If you don't go cutting parts and, you know, parts off of it, you know, such as wings and tails and things, but, you know, that airplane really helped, you know, communities survive, whether it's wartime efforts is find doctors around, or if that's what the plane was thought of, the purpose of the plane was back then. But, you know, or delivering fuel. Without fuel, these towns would be, you know, just from watching, like, you know, modern day Flying Wild Alaska or something like that, you can see that aviation is such a huge dependent, you know, almost too much of a dependent on these little communities, and these communities almost depend a little too much on aviation, which in my opinion is a great thing, you know. And if all of a sudden, if one goes away, you know, the working relationship stops, and, you know, both ends kind of fizzle out.
Well, actually, I was thinking earlier this week, I was in Charleston, and I flew from Charleston to O'Hare, and I thought, you know, I'm always checking to see what where the King Air is going, or maybe Mark Cirrus, you know, use a flight aware thing. So I thought, I wonder if I can check a commercial flight. So I put in UA 6009, I think, and there was the flight from Charleston to O'Hare. But then it immediately went O'Hare to Madison. It went Madison to Denver. It was going Denver to Las Vegas.
Nice.
I was thinking, in 24 hours, this plane is going to be in 10 different cities all over this country. And then I thought, here I'm thinking about this plane, this C-54, and all I'm thinking of, it rolled off an assembly line in Chicago. It might have flown in Alaska, and it ended up in Chandler, Arizona.
Wait a minute. It was built in Chicago?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't hear that part of it.
Oh, that's where they all came off the assembly line, at the Douglas Aircraft Factory at, you know, over there at Mannheim and Tui.
I didn't know that we had one there. I'm showing my ignorance. By the way, I just looked it up in a C-54 Skymaster.
Yeah.
It was a DC-4.
Ooh. That's awesome.
That is awesome. I'm really into this now. You got me going, Kirk. I'm looking up. I'm seeing pictures. I'm this Douglas C-54 Skymaster homepage, Strategic Air Command.
Well, and now when you think about this, the Douglas Aircraft Factory was built here specifically for building these aircraft. It was a huge, 100,000, 200,000 square foot. I mean,
is the facility still there?
No. And that's the thing. I was telling my dad about this project, and, he said, well, you know what? After the war, when the Douglas had abandoned it, I mean, it was no longer using this, assembly line, my dad remembers going over there for a roller skating party. He grew up in the northwest side of Chicago, and they had some kind of a party for the, I don't know if it was for the high school graduating class, and they went roller skating on this huge expanse of concrete that was the floor of the assembly line.
Cool.
They offered a, you know, pulled a gift out of the hat. My dad won an airplane flight.
Really?
So he flew from here to, he can't remember, it was Rockford or Milwaukee. He said it was, they left, it was getting dark. It was like the guy wanted to get back before it got dark. I don't know if there were smudge pots lining the thing, but I believe this runway that they were landing on, there was an airfield, and there's been something in the Tribune within the last year that a fellow that's trying to find and keep alive all these memories. It might have been 37 airports around our Cook County.
Right.
Not that long ago. Well, one of them had a runway that paralleled Toohey Avenue over where the American Airlines crash was in 1979. Now Chicago police kennel. They teach, you know, the dogs over there. But so just to the, that'd be the north of Toohey.
Right.
There was a strip. And so that's where my dad got to take advantage of the flight that he won in this building that the planes came out
of.
It's just, the more you talk about it, the more, you know, people remember or come up with things.
Would it be too much of a digression to talk a little bit about the history of this DC-4, C-54? Can I do that now? Because I'm reading some
cheating
things.
Now that you're looking at the...
Well, but it's very interesting. There's things in here that I think people will go, oh my goodness. May I?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So although it served with the USAAF, United States Army Air Force, as a transport, the C-54 made history when it became the first official presidential transport aircraft, Air Force One. It was the very first Air Force One.
Neat.
Known as the Sacred Cow. It was built in 1944 for use by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. One special feature was an elevator behind the passenger cabin to lift the president in his wheelchair in and out of the plane. The passenger compartment included a conference room with a large desk and a bulletproof picture window. President Roosevelt made his first and only flight in this aircraft, traveling to Yalta and the USSR in February 1945. For security reasons, the tail number on the aircraft was changed for this flight. So it goes on and on. It was, let's see. The United States Army Air Force accepted a total of 1,164 Skymasters from 42 to 47. Its maximum load was 28,000 pounds of cargo or 49 passengers. It's the first Air Force One. I think that's pretty cool.
That is pretty gnarly.
Excuse me while I get a little excited here. The Sacred Cow.
That's awesome. This main township Sacred Cow is out in Chandler, Arizona.
Yeah.
And we're trying to, we need to get to it.
So how do we help?
How do we help indeed?
Well, I was kind of hoping that maybe somebody listening in tonight might know something, might live out in that area.
So we need to develop, so what you're saying is that we need to kind of develop a little recon team.
That's what I'd like to do.
Yeah.
I think we can call in some resources, not just the radio, but let's AOPA.
The Commemorative Air Force.
Oh, there you go. That would be a great one.
Out in Falcon Field, out there.
There's people that will help you.
I'm sure there are.
A year later into this, we can help this accelerate this.
Yeah, so this is a cool little, now this has turned in from a radio show to a brainstorming session.
Yeah, really. Oh, is there somebody listening? Excuse me. I feel like I'm just talking.
Yeah, no, I think this is cool. So, you know, think creatively. The Commemorative Air Force is out there, the AOPA. They could maybe possibly have some pull on this, you know, and definitely our listeners. Our listeners out there, I'm sure, know a lot of people on this.
Well, if there are people on the internet that have photographs of this plane because they've traveled and seen it, I mean, again, wouldn't surprise me that somebody listening is going to say, I've been there.
Well, like I said, this is a perfect picture of it right there.
Right.
We have a picture, full color.
Yeah, so all you have to do is Google the tail number, and you'll find a bunch of pictures on it, right?
Yeah, we could get a gear door off of this or a radio antenna. Even just actually being, is enough of the number, the end number. Maybe we can saw that off.
We need to be able to bring it home, that's all.
Yeah.
Landing gear might not fit in the overhead compartment.
Yeah, right.
Well, we heard from Al today that you, as long as you can fit in, for $25, you can bring it.
Yeah, right.
During our early portion, we talked about an airline that's now charging for carry-ons, $25.
How about that
thing, there it is.
That's cool. That's a nice-looking airplane.
Yeah, I grabbed one of the blades of the props, the little three-bladed prop.
Actually, the other thing I found online...
And it's got a power cart right next to it.
Nice.
So you guys need to go on and look up N49... Let me get this right. 44911.
It's sisters.
There's a, I don't know, but it's the consecutive N number, and there's a YouTube video of that one up in Alaska. Some guy sitting in that thing firing it up, and he starts one engine, he starts the next one, and then a fire breaks out.
Oh, jeez.
Guy jumps out, and the thing gets consumed. I mean, and I was watching it. I thought originally that was our plane. I thought I was watching it go. But it was 44911, and ours is 44910.
You know what's interesting? Here's it is again, but this is before it lost its tail. But the engine nacelles on this side are ripped apart. In other ones, the tail's gone, but the engine nacelles have been rebuilt or something.
Well, yeah. It's clear that he was using, somebody was using it for parts. And
but right. Somebody put parts back and then took off the tail.
Roger Brooks even said it, he thinks it's, you know, vandals. I don't know what they're doing with the aircraft.
I would just call that,
shrinkage.
Swappable parts.
Yeah, maybe we can contract with the vandals and say, look, you're taking parts. Can you grab one for us?
Here's our list.
Yeah, right.
I know somebody that for $100 on the reservation that would, no, just kidding. So, this is really turned into kind of a neat story. So ideally on May 18th, what would be the most ideal outcome?
Oh, my goal had been to try to retrieve something from that aircraft before May 18th. Just to have it there.
And what happens May 18th? Moment.
That's when we're having, I'm calling it an oral history day. It's the day that we're going to record those oral histories, but ultimately we'd like to ask some of the people that attend on the 18th if they'd be willing to be recorded so that we could hear.
So what about, would your wife want to go like on a 2-day trip, you know, one overnight while you kind of on this airplane scavenger hunt?
Oh, I think she could probably be interested once the school year is over.
Yeah, true. So, well, yeah, but still, I mean, you could end up, I think it would be very doable. And, you know, if you were to go out there, I would definitely go to the Falcon Field or contact the people at the Commemorative Air Force and then see if you could get a round of people to come with, because they operate these airplanes out of the Falcon Field.
And is that nearby?
Yeah, it's just on the northeast corner of Phoenix. So if you just go straight south from there, I believe, you know, you're gonna see it. Probably be able to see it through the fence.
Right.
Yeah. You know, how can we help, Mark?
I think it's called a diversion.
A diversion.
Yeah. Look, Haley's Comet. When they look up, we run in and get it.
How long would it take us to get there in the Cirrus and with our tools?
Who cares? Let's just do it.
See that, and so far that was the only frustration, is to try to get a hold of someone who says, sure, you can do it, come on out, and then we get out there and
if you would go up to that airport, is there anyone there?
See, and I'm not even sure there is. I don't know. But online, you can find the name of the airport manager, but I don't know if he's there, that he could be someone.
Well, you've tried to get a hold of him.
Right.
And he's never there.
He never responded. So my best contact's been the newspaper editor.
Which makes sense.
And again, I was excited that he thought it was a good story, and he said, maybe we could write about it out here. That's a neat story.
Yeah, I would use that. Get it out in the masses and see if people would mind, mind you, you know, doing something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think you should go for the N number. The piece of aluminum with the N number on it, I think, would be the coolest piece to grab from there.
Well, I need someone like Al, who knows how to take an N number off of an aircraft or something.
Well, maybe we just buy a piece of aluminum and write N 49910 or whatever it is.
Yeah. I don't know. You could do a,
I don't know. There's a lot of cool different
engine
things.
Instrument. Yeah, if there's anything left or a yoke.
You could take the bird's nest in the nacelle of the engine.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. The bird has got a number on its back.
Yeah. No, but, so that's really, so what do you think has been the most enjoyable part of this, this PI work, if you will?
Well, I think it's kind of combining my more recent, entry back into aviation. So I, you know, flew in the early 80s and then I didn't fly for 30 years and I just started up again 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And, then to have this join this organization and find out about this plane. And, I think that's what it was. I was at one of our board meetings and one of the guys was talking about it and he mentioned he was a pilot. And I said, oh, I'm just starting up again. And it turned out he was not really, you know, he was a pilot a long time ago, but wasn't flying. So he was kind of interested then in, well, maybe I can fly with you sometime. So it was kind of neat to talk aviation with somebody and then to hear about this project.
Oh, I think that's kind of a neat transgression and back into aviation. And, you know, I always try to say, hey, aviation is more than just pilots flying airplanes. And, you know, there's stories that need to be told. So we need journalists and photographers and things like that. And, you know, so this is definitely, you know, I think this whole story proves the value of aviation, if that makes sense at all.
The value of aviation?
Yeah, the value of aviation. You could have a town rally, you know, that raised in a matter of weeks $500,000 back in, what was it, 1944 standards. That's a lot of money. And, you know, just the history of this airplane that we talked about, serving 30 years in the military, then, you know, essentially another 30 years out on the frontier, if you will. And, you know, now you're trying to reclaim part of it, you know, bring it back home.
Right.
So there's a lot of generations, you know, that are kind of mixed into this, you know, and trying to preserve and touch that, you know, just one airplane, you know, what kind of an impact it's really, really making.
Right. And there's people from this community that were part of getting the name put on it. They're the people that made the aircraft. They're the people that are just out in Chandler who happened to house the thing right now, but
right.
They didn't know where it came from.
Yeah.
So they're learning stuff that they never knew and
right.
It's kind of making them think about it.
It is pretty cool. You know, like, so you remember, Mark, when Steve Shapiro was on our show, and he talked about the Boeing B-29.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And, so, you know, we talked about that model of airplane, you know, there's not many airplanes that have changed the world, you know, or set, you know, changed the world, meaning, you know, swing the tide in a different direction, right? You know, it had that much of a force, you know, and ultimately that was the airplane that dropped the atom bombs, right? And, or the atomic bombs. And there's definitely like this historical significance between, you know, behind the B-29. Everybody in the world could kind of tell a story behind that, right?
Right.
But there's not many other models of airplanes that can really do that. But if you look at the general footprint of just one airplane, right? You know, just this C-54, the main flyer again?
Right.
Right? So the main flyer and, you know, throughout its throughout its life, and you could say that it's still living, quote unquote, you know, just sitting in the desert, but, you know, it's obviously will never fly ever again, but.
What?
What?
Don't say that.
Yeah. Well, if we're bringing hacksaws and sawzaws out there, yeah, we're definitely not playing Operation, you know, for fun. But
hey, bring that tail over here. Give me a couple engines.
Yeah, but no, but just, you know, the significance of one airplane on, you know, its impact on the world is still very, very significant.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something to get really excited. That
sounds like you should be writing a book. Or Kirk should, maybe.
Kirk.
I'll add that to my list of things.
Things to do.
The airplane that changed the North Woods forever.
That's right.
Exactly.
Alan, yeah. I read a book like that recently.
So. Yeah. Exactly. It was nice.
You saw the emails went around. I don't know why I'm digressing this about that book written by Jim Atkinson and Fred Atkinson that made its way around on our email list. You guys are both looking at me like I'm nuts.
Yeah, I have no clue what you're talking about.
I didn't see that email.
Oh, from Bob Schmelzer?
That must be...
Okay.
You must be...
Never mind. I'll just...
Private email list or something.
I guess so. Whatever. Where's that sound effects when I want it?
So, do you know if Park Ridge has any other ties to aviation beyond, you know, Hillary Clinton trying to find Amelia Earhart's remains and the C-54 flyer?
Oh, I think we all know a fair number of veterans, you know, that live in the community, people that you're surprised at. That's the other thing. When my kids, when we have on Veterans Day and people come back to, you know, go to the grade schools, and right. I'm always impressed when these guys come back. People you never even knew.
Sure.
I go to church with some guy, and he was a bomber pilot, you know.
Wow.
And I finally talked to him about it, and, you know, I think he was 19 years old when he got started. I mean, he's flying these planes 19, 20, 21 years old, and then when he got out, he never flew again.
Wow.
I mean, that's quite a story.
That
Here,
is.
We're trying to get excited about flying general aviation and, you know, figure out ways to go to have breakfast and so on. These guys were flying bombing runs when they were 20.
Wow.
That's just crazy.
It is. It really is. You know, so do you think there's other, you know, communities here? Well, do you think, you know, just based on how things have reacted, let's take the veterans out of this, you know, just from just because there's always, you know, some people that have served our country and everything like that, but it's just like from an airplane standpoint or something, like a story like this, right? Do you think there's a lot of communities that have stories like this going on?
I think there are definitely other communities that did what Maine Township did.
Right.
So Maine Township wasn't unique in this selling of the war bonds.
Right.
You know, that's what we found out. I think when I started, I thought we were unique, but I think there were other communities even right around us that were doing this. So it was an effort that clearly kind of resonated throughout the country. I think what was neat here was just our proximity to the aircraft, to the factory. I mean, it was 2 miles away.
Right.
That's kind of neat.
That is. That is very neat. I think, you know, I mean, that just...
Maybe that's why the young lady that sold all the war bonds was able to go to that ceremony. I mean, maybe if this was a community in California that had raised the money, they probably couldn't come out and sit there and see their plane roll off the assembly line.
But, right.
They yeah. could hear.
It looks like there's a really big crowd in one of these articles that you brought, the dedication, I think it was.
Yes.
I mean, this is packed. I mean, there's people packed underneath the wings and, you know,
well,
the
think
belly.
About the time. I mean, we were in war. Everyone kind of came together, common enemy.
Right. True.
Right?
Yeah, so there's
I
a
mean,
lot
my
of
mom was involved with projects. I think she made ammunition or she worked on the A-bomb or something. Like, I don't know. But there was stuff. Working in factory. Everyone worked for the war effort.
Again, I think that's the neatest. I mean, that is what I think we're trying to maybe impress upon the young people about what went on then and just what it meant to everyone to rally around a cause. The hardships that people had to put up with, the you know, the tragedies, if you will, but the successes also. And
yeah, you know, absolutely.
Yeah. So what's next?
Well, I'm hoping we're gonna hear from someone.
Yeah.
Or maybe the three of us and others are gonna put our heads together and we'll do a flyout.
That'd be neat.
You know, we talked about flyouts at the club meeting. I don't know. This would be a.
We should do it before
one.
It gets really hot there, though.
I'm game.
Absolutely. We got to bring a battery charger too. I don't think the Sawzall would.
Just a, yeah,
would last
not
against
a
Douglas built
how thick is the
ribs
exterior
and, yeah,
fuselage
ribs and riveting.
I have a feeling it wouldn't be as thick as I would think.
Yeah,
you know,
it was pretty thin back at in all airplanes.
Yeah,
yeah, but you know, I don't know. I've got a maybe I'm playing devil's advocate here, but I think, you know, the Douglas time-tested, you know, craftsmanship might beat
our little battery-operated circular saw might not make it.
What? By that time, we might be just coming with a brake line, you know, something that's easy to cut. I don't know. But I think this is a cool cause and things like that. You know, if you do get a piece back, would you plan on maybe doing more of a formal ceremony or something like that?
I don't know if we thought that through. I mean, I'm not sure that everybody's thinking about it as much as I am right now. So I think if we got, you know, if I was successful in finding something, we'd definitely try to figure it out. And
yeah. Well, no, I think you definitely should if you can, because this is, you know, that gives somebody something to rally around again. You know, and this is, you talk about the sacrifices that you made, you know, trying to, you could be sacrificing life and limb once you get to the Chandler Airport. It's either that, again, you know, for trespassing or against the man.
I'm glad you said the man
in the machine.
Barbed wire or something. Yeah.
Yeah. No, so I think the best way to go about it is to work through your newspaper guy. He's there on a everyday basis. All you need is a phone call with an airport manager or someone that happens to be by that has some authority. They'll say, yeah, go on in.
And I don't know if that'll be like a quick turnaround. They'll say, sure, come on out on Thursday. So I think I have to be kind of prepared to just get out there if I can hear from somebody.
Absolutely. Well, awesome. I wish you the best of luck on your search. And, you know, I think if any of our listeners can help out, we certainly would love to help out this cause and support it and rally around it, because this is, you know, the true essence of what it's trying to do.
Well, I've listened to your show and I've heard people call in from all parts. So, thanks for letting me talk about it.
Yeah.
It's a good project and I'm looking forward to all of our group being able to listen in on Sunday too.
Yeah.
Oh, very, absolutely. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for coming out and talking about it. And I can't wait to hear an update on it. That's for sure.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Kirk.
Hey. All right. Good night.
All right.
You have a good one.
So, Mark, I got a question for you.
All right.
Would you venture on to the Indian reservation without notice to anybody and try to get a part off their airplane?
Oh, man.
I'm just trying to test your commitment to the project.
Well, there's a commitment to the project, and then there's right and wrong. And I was always taught there's no right way to do a wrong thing. You just have to – I think you just need to find an appropriate level of access.
True. Yeah, that's – I guess you're – absolutely. Especially with airports too. You just don't know. Anything. I mean, that's a little sensitive of an issue.
Plus, I mean, if someone sees this and misconstrues what's happening, you don't know what could happen.
Right.
Right. There's risk involved from that side too. But so I would say no, I wouldn't sneak on unless it was after midnight.
After midnight. You don't know. That's a good Eric Clapton song. I like that.
Layla. Oh, that's a different Eric Clapton.
Derek That's and the a different great one.
Derek and the Dominoes.
Derek and the Dominoes.
Yeah, Eric Clapton.
Yes.
Yeah.
Down. Yeah. So anyway, I think that's cool that Kirk took something on like this.
You know? Well, I love the aviation connection.
Yeah, and it's really neat to actually hear the pride behind it, and somebody, you know, in our, you know, kind of era or generation that says, hey, you know what, this is important. This is really important stuff to know. Probably, you know, the town has no clue that this went on, or the high school or anything. And it's kind of a cool thing. They supported a war effort, or supported the country, but, you know, they supported aviation.
Yeah. I don't know why it made me think of it, but recently in the last week I saw a news story about a time capsule.
Right.
That was buried in 1913. And this church, and I don't even know what state, it's not coming to me, but they opened it up. And I think that's really cool, because you really get some insight, you know, what happened back then and the connection to this church. It was a church and this town and how it changed and maybe in some respects didn't. So that historical thing, it's just really cool.
It really is. It is really neat. And I kind of, that brings it up to, you know, the thought up to me of like, hey, what actually happened in my town? you know, did my town do something like this, or is things like that? There's actually a little airport that used to be not too far from where I live in Oak Park, Illinois, and it was called the Old Checkerboard Airport.
Oh, really?
Did you ever hear of that?
No, I haven't.
It was kind of neat. So right now, it's do you know where Loyola Hospital is in Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Like off of First Avenue and 290. Well, it was right there. It was like half of the hospital campus used to be part of the airport.
There's a website or some information source where you can see the old airports of Chicago. I'm sure you could just pull a map out.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love that stuff. As a matter of fact, I don't know if we've talked about it on the show, but I live where the Northbrook VOR is based.
Right.
And before it was a high school and a set of baseball fields and all that, it was a Nike base.
There's right.
Silos in there. And it was deserted, but even we'd walk the dog or whatever. You could walk the runways. And
cool.
Yeah, you ended up having to watch out for the beer bottles the kids left the night before. But
were they yours?
No. No, I didn't drink beer. I was a whiskey. Oh, never mind. No. No, you know, this is as an adult, but, you know, it was cool in the silos there, and to know that now that there's a high school and football fields and baseball fields, it's amazing. But I always remember the airport there.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. You know, there's a not another airport that wasn't too far from Palwaukee, the Glenview Naval Air Station.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And but now, you know what I didn't realize? So it's kind of a neat – have you been over to the Glen? It's now a modern shopping center.
Yeah, we eat there and stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Go out there for dinner and stuff like that. It's a cool place. I mean, they did a nice job. But
they left the control tower?
Yeah, I didn't realize that was the real control tower.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, that was neat. So I kind of felt bad that the whole airport was ripped up, but then – you know, to see that in the design, the control tower was left, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, no, it is. Matter of fact, I haven't even been down to Northerly Island. Did they leave anything from Meg's down there?
Yeah, they have the terminal, the fire department, or the fire station, and the control tower.
Can you go into the control tower?
No, I would love to. Just because then you could, like, pretend you're Rob Mark for a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. So it's locked up, or I'm wondering if we know anybody in the FAA that could let us in.
I'm sure it's not owned by the FAA anymore.
Well, we could talk to Mayor Rahm.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, it would.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, we'll have to go. Let's figure out that. So here's a question. Would you break into the MiGs field control tower?
What's with this?
I don't know. It's just,
would you rob a man on the street corner? No.
Would you, if you really want to get into the MiGs field control tower, would you break into it if you really wanted to get?
I would not, no. Again, there's I weigh the risk. There's some things that are worth the risk and some things that just aren't. But yeah. I would like to go down there and just, how close can you get to it?
You know, I don't remember. I remember it was kind of surreal because, you know, my dad and I, we used to go down there and watch airplanes take off and land. But then it was surreal because, you know, it's not like this prairie pathway, like walk, you know, they have
I haven't
a walking
been there
path.
I haven't even been to Millennium Park, and that's been how many years? And I'm downtown all the time. I just I have no desire to go over there. I don't know what it is about me.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
It is weird, and I admit it.
Yeah,
I'm not proud of it, but I admit it.
But yeah, so it felt pretty surreal walking around. You could see the control tower there, like through the high brush and things like that. But it was like, oh wow, I'm actually standing on, you know, one of the coolest places that ever existed.
Yeah.
And the starting point of my favorite computer game.
I remember that when it first came out before you were born.
Yes.
Yeah. It was green lines, and you could see the Sears or John Hancock building.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm just dreaming of going back. You know, you talk about where you say I'm just standing on this cool place that used to be. It kind of touches back to history. Did I ever tell you about my trip to Italy and how it impacted me?
No.
So I went to Italy, and long story short, is when I came to the Roman Forum.
Oh, where Caesar was murdered?
Yeah.
I had that same feeling.
What do you mean? You've been there?
Yeah.
I saw the Colosseum. I said, okay, this is cool. I saw the Pantheon. I saw the Vatican. Everything was really cool. And it was rainy. It was December. But when I came around that corner and I saw the Forum, I stopped my wife and I was like, oh my goodness, this is it. This is the Forum.
Yeah.
And you could touch it and it's to this day, even as I'm speaking, I get goosebumps when I talk about it.
Wow. You are getting goosebumps.
Ooh, baby. Yeah. No, to me, that was cool to realize that I was on the same ground that those guys were. I mean, they were here. They obviously stepped here.
Yeah.
Right.
I had that same feeling. When you sit there, you're like, wow, this is where Caesar stood.
Yeah. Well, then you could see on the tree he had written JC loves KL or something like that. Julius Caesar loves, when he was a kid.
Yeah.
That's
okay. JC. But yeah, so anyway. Where's that failed joke button?
Yeah. See, I got to hook this up to the thing because right now I just got to put my microphone next to whatever.
Yeah, this is still in the beta
test
period.
Last week I had it hooked up.
Nice.
Wait a minute. Here we go. Did it come across?
It did.
All right. Cool.
Very cool. Well, that's definitely, that's cool. We'll get that thing up and running.
Yeah, you can.
We need a sound man. I kind of feel like Clark W. Griswold with that one.
Yeah, right.
But, there's another airport that actually I think did a nice job of, the airport didn't do a nice job. Because the airport was just a couple slabs of concrete. But the developers of this one airport actually kind of did a nice job of making it a cool place. And they kept the tower, the control tower. And I just love it when they keep the control tower. I don't know. There's something cool about that. And it's the Denver Stapleton Airport. They've turned into subdivisions, but they've kept the tower.
Oh, that is cool.
To embrace a little bit of the history as well as just keep it there for like observation deck.
I'm trying to think. Isn't there another couple that are pretty famous for doing that as they moved from old facilities to new facilities? Kansas City? No, because they still use that control tower. You're more of a get around the country than I am.
This is a good question.
Yeah.
Too bad
we're not live because we could ask our listeners for,
yeah,
for some help on this.
Phone a friend. Tweet a friend. Use a lifeline.
TAF.
Yeah. Well, let's find that out. Let's bring that up next week because I think that's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
And if I could live at one of those places, I would. Just to look at. And I would want a view of the tower.
I have fond memories of going to O'Hare Airport in the 60s. Obviously, there was no security or anything. You could go wherever.
Right.
And they used to have, it looked like an old control tower, and it was the observation deck.
Really?
You could go up into it. There was one, I think you were on the roof, actually, and could stand on the roof of a building and watch.
Yeah.
But then you could go in this thing that reminded me of a control tower that was empty in there, and we just...
Wow.
We would look at airplanes from there.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah, it was awesome. Matter of fact, that is something I'm going to look up. I'm going to do that right now while we go on to another topic and see if there is something on the internet.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's good. So today I was at the Spirit of St. Louis Airport.
My good old buddies, the approach controllers that want to have lunch with us.
Yeah. I thought that was cool. I need to go figure out which building they're at next time we go. That's a cool airport. And they actually had this little observation deck there that was, I don't know if it was an old tower, or maybe it was the old tower and then they like chopped the head off of it or the cab, and then they planted it and put it out, for the viewing, a viewing area. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's been many years since I've been to Spirit of St. Louis Airport, but I used to fly out of there. They had a flight school. I moved to St. Louis and I was, renting little Archers there.
Nice. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So I kind of want to figure out what this, like, half of a control tower is there and what it does. And I used to work at the Rantoul Airport in Rantoul, Illinois.
Wow.
And they, which was an old military base. Now, that's where you often see a lot of these, like, defunct control towers, is, you know, at these military air bases that were now converted into general aviation airports.
Right.
Well, you know what they used the old control tower for?
What's that?
Tractor pulls.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. What a waste.
They've got it on this platform, and every year they have this, like, farm show. And part of the farm show.
How is
show,
that possible? I don't understand that.
They cut, like, the top, you know, cut it in half, like half the stem off of it. And then they put it on there. It's, like, bolted to this platform. And then they drag it through the mud.
That is nuts.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So they said, so, I don't know, the multi-purpose uses of control towers are pretty neat. They're actually building a new one in Cleveland, which is, like, really huge.
At Hopkins?
Yeah, Hopkins. And you can see, like, the concrete structure go up, and then, like, they're building the ironworks around it. And, you know, all the different levels that this thing has at the top. Like, you know how a control tower, like, at the very top is the cab, but then, you know, like, it balloons out.
Right, yeah.
You know, where, like, you don't realize how big control towers are until actually you go into them, and then, like, well, these are, like, office skyscrapers.
Yeah, totally, I won't say unrelated, but it's going to be a left turn here that you're not expecting. I used to be in a business, and I would working or calling on a company that made these huge tractors. And I'm talking, they're bigger than a 747. They're, like, 20 stories high.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I went to the manufacturer of these. It's for mining, you know.
Oh, right.
Right? So they put me in the cab while they were building the cab. Jeez. And this was before they attached to the top of the tractor.
Yeah.
But it was like an apartment up there. You sat in a Star Trek type seat with joysticks and all that, but they had tables, they had bathrooms because people went up there and they spent the day there.
Wow.
And the thing moved like at a mile an hour. Or something like that, but they used to show me pictures compared to a 747, and I just thought that was, you just don't have any sense of the size of these things.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you really don't, and it's pretty amazing to see all these machines and understand that these are machines and, you know, like, hey, the operators, you know, have little tables and chairs and stuff so you can eat and go to the washroom and stuff. Oh, it's kind of gnarly.
Yeah.
So did you find what you're looking for?
Well, I'm finding a lot of text on it. And this one guy says, does anyone remember when they closed the observation deck at O'Hare and exactly where it's located? I seem to recall it was in T2, Terminal 2. I love that picture of the old deck on the UA terminal. A Boeing 720 at F1. Here's another. Okay, so they say here's a picture, but there's no picture here. Right?
Wow, there is no picture.
There is no picture, but I'm going to get the picture. Maybe we can even post it because it was cool. And it wasn't big. It was just on part of the terminal. I mean, it was just a different world.
Right.
Isn't it funny? It's kind of all becoming very vivid in my mind as I'm talking about. Just remember going there.
Yeah, I can tell.
I'm getting a little sentimental. Sentimental, man. Jeez.
No, but that's pretty cool. So did you do any flying this week?
Yes. I hadn't been up in a while, so on Tuesday morning, I got up at 6 and came over here with another member of the flying club.
That's like the best time to fly.
Well, yeah, we wanted to be calm, although it was already gusting 20 and...
Jeez.
We went up in the Sky Arrow, and you can't go up if the winds are gusting 20, not because it won't fly in the 20, but if you have to taxi and you get a crosswind on the taxi, it can really disrupt things. But it was fine. Though actually, it was funny. We were coming back. We landed 1-6, taxiing down 2-4 to Hangar 5, and at Hangar 4, and people that are listening to this don't know what the heck I'm talking about, but it's where all the Eclipse jet service centers.
Yeah.
And there was a guy warming up and we got caught in the just taxing, but he was getting out of the ramp and all of a sudden the plane starts because he was starting his engines and we got caught.
Nice.
Yeah. Not nice. It scared the whatever out of me.
Well, that's not so, but other than that, how was your flight?
My flight was great because I hadn't been up in a while, and I had never flown in the back seat of the Sky Arrow.
Did you like it?
I liked it, except since the rudder pedals weren't movable, it was kind of an awkward angle for me. My knees were bothering me, so I couldn't do much with the rudders. So I took off, but since it was gusty, I let my buddy do all the landings.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. He did a great job. I have to post something to SparkReel, as a matter of fact.
That's cool. I like that airplane a lot. I'm looking forward to flying that. Now, for those of you who don't know what a Sky Arrow is, it kind of looks like a motorized glider. You know, your first impression would be, oh, home-built, ultralight.
Except it's a high wing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, some people think of gliders as low wings.
Right. So you may think, like, oh, well, this thing would fly like a 152, but it doesn't. And you can actually pull out the windows, and I'm actually kind of looking forward to taking my girlfriend on a little Chicago skyline tour and that with the windows out.
Before you take her, would you take your boyfriend?
Well, I don't have a boyfriend.
All right, your friend that's your co-host? I guess that did kind of come
out. Wow, that's... I can guarantee you that I'm going to go back and edit that.
Yeah, take that out. Take that out. That's not what I meant.
Holy cow.
Oh, shoot. I'm a happily married man. Not that there's anything wrong with that other thing.
Oh, my God.
All right, I think I have a picture of it. All right, I found this picture. See the thing behind the Air Canada?
Yeah.
That was the observation.
Is that still there?
I don't think so. But you could go, I think you could go on the roof, but you could go into the little control tower. Like
I think that is still there.
Do you really?
Yeah, I want to say yes.
All right. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
Wow.
I remember that. God. Yeah, we used to go up in there.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, yeah. I'm still shocked by how poorly that came out.
Yeah, your friend. I didn't need to put a gender in front of it.
Wow. But anyway, it's a, I wish more commercial airports would do things like that. I know Baltimore actually has a really nice observation deck. And the Smithsonian Annex, Air Museum Annex at the Dulles Airport, they kind of built like a half control tower where you can go up and learn about air traffic control through the museum and look out over the Dulles Airport and do that. I would challenge that to be a great flyout with an overnight.
Where is that?
Dulles.
Oh, we're going to talk about that Saturday. Not the flyout portion of it. We're going to talk about landing at Dulles. I'm going to let Carl do it.
Nice.
I think that's very cool. I keep thinking, and I'm a dreamer, right? So if I were to win a big lottery,
right.
You know, besides like curing a few diseases and buying a nice jet for me and all that, I'd be a philanthropist. And one of the things I would like to do is really generate some excitement around aviation. And I think I would, you know, build something like you're talking about at O'Hare, or at here, or somewhere where people could go up and learn. I don't know. There's no old control tower here, but to use some, maybe in Glenview, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just get some buzz going about aviation.
Definitely. Yeah. You know what? While we're on the subject of air traffic control, you know, did you know that I'm going to be getting checked out as a virtual air traffic controller?
No, are you really?
Yeah.
You're going to do the pilot edge thing?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. How do you get checked out on that?
I don't know. Well, to be honest with you, I had a layover in Caldwell, New Jersey, and that's kind of where near Keith Smith is from.
I thought he was West Coast.
No.
Oh, really? Because all the flights are West Coast.
Yeah. So I think that's where, I think there's a West Coast connection in there. But anyway, it was kind of cool. He came over, he flew over to where we were at and landed. It was funny, his airport was 6 miles away. So he flew over and landed. And he was showing me his airplane. All of a sudden he looks at his watch. He's like, oh my goodness, I got to go. We got to get to an internet connection. I'm like, why? He's like, a flyout is starting on Pilot Edge and I need to be on the scope. And I'm like, oh, cool. So then all of a sudden he let me control a few airplanes, and then he's like, hey, do we need to get you checked out as a controller? And I'm like, yeah.
How do I get checked out?
We got to talk to Keith.
I would like that, because then we can maybe start to open up the Midwest. Of course, I have no time to do everything anyway. Oh, there's Brant.
Yeah,
squirrel. I just saw the red and white Mooney land.
Like, what are you talking
about? That's the problem with daytime here. We're looking out as we're talking. Al and I aren't even looking at each other. We're just kind of got our heads out the window, and I just saw a familiar Mooney land. And I'm sorry. It's at ADD for Pilot ADD.
But yeah, but I'm actually looking forward to doing the Pilot Edge thing. And, you know, from an educational standpoint, you know, Keith was like, hey, you know what? He's like, you do a good job. He's like, and you're helping pilots learn how to talk on the radio. And I'm like, yeah, cool. And you know, that whole fear of like talking on the radio for the first time, like, oh, I got to push the button and talk to the scary man that's listening.
Scary man.
I felt like I had the same nerves being the controller too. Like, I don't want to respond to this guy. I don't want to respond to this guy. You know, somebody do it. Here, you take it. I don't want to talk to it. You know, it's like.
I know what you mean. We have had many demonstrations by the tower folks here, and they are always, they lay out a map and we play controller, and I get a little nervous.
Really?
Even though I could do this stuff in my sleep, and then all of a sudden I'm on with like lots of people watching me, and I, oh my goodness, what am I going to say the right thing? I don't know what the hell I'm doing, what the heck I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, I think it's kind of it's definitely interesting. We'll have to do that. I think it would be cool to have a multi-club fly out on Pilot Edge and then have like, you know, a couple club members be the controllers.
And virtual food.
Yes, virtual food. Exactly.
Mm.
Yum. Yum. But yeah. Anyway, so that's kind of cool. But
yeah, so I haven't, but besides that Sky Aero flight, I haven't flown. And I need to, maybe this weekend, although the weather looks iffy, I think.
Yeah, it's a good day to get your approaches in.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Can't do that in the Sky Aero.
No, you cannot. But anyway, we got a really cool month of May and early June lined up.
Yep, talk to me.
So next week, it's going to be a really cool show. It's something to really look forward to. We have a guest coming in. He's actually flying in to be on the show with us.
My kind of guest.
Yeah, exactly. It makes, I guess, I don't know. I feel like kind of important because, no, I don't, but, anyway.
Kind of a big deal.
You kind of are. So anyway, it's cool. The CEO of Air Choice One Airlines is going to be coming on, and he's going to be talking about, you know, what it's like to run an airline, what's it like to be an entrepreneur in aviation, and what kind of, you know, opportunities that he may see in the airlines.
That's cool. You know, I have always, I shouldn't say always, but I have for most of my life wanted to earn a living in aviation.
Yeah.
And, it doesn't have to be just flying. It has to be connected and adding value. And, you know, to hear something like that kind of gets my juices going too, that, you know, yeah, that would have been cool to do something like that.
Right. Absolutely. So then, after that, we have a lady coming on. She is doing, a really cool project of producing like a list and creating the stories around, airport restaurants.
Ugh. And with Janesville closing, I'm interested to find out more. That'd be cool. I had a gentleman that wants to be on our show, and we're going to schedule him.
Yes.
As you know, I'm a big believer, although not as active as I'd like to be, with Angel Flight.
Yes.
And so the managing director or executive director of Angel Flight Central, based in Kansas City, has thought it would be great to be on our show and has asked for some times in May and June. So he's coming up.
Perfect.
And he used to be a program manager at a radio station in Kansas City, so he's interested with the radio concept
nice.
As well. So that's
awesome.
That's cool.
Awesome. And then finally, I actually booked this. We've nailed a date down yesterday. And what's your favorite aviation software?
What's my favorite aviation software?
Yeah.
ForeFlight?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Good answer. So Tyson Weiss of the founder and CEO of ForeFlight is going to be on the show.
There's another guy that made it big in aviation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's great. That'll be a fun one.
Yeah, definitely.
We had John and Martha, and the hits just keep on coming.
Yeah, so we'll be playing like oldie songs of, I don't know, the hits. That's what I think of hits.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw Tom Cruise in The Few Good Men. Did you see that movie?
No.
You've never seen A Few Good Men?
No, I have. Excuse me. Yeah. Excuse me.
I want the truth.
Yes.
Like
yes.
That when, at the beginning when Demi Moore says, I'm coming to Guantanamo Bay with you. And he looks at it and he says, and the hits just keep on coming. So it's always kind of something that enters in my mind.
Yeah. Right.
He wasn't too excited about that.
Ooh. No. So anyway, it's going to be a pretty cool couple of weeks on the show and everything like that. So, but anyway, much thanks to Kirk for joining us
tonight.
Yeah,
that was always good to talk to someone you know that's doing some amazing things in aviation, somehow connected to aviation. So that was a cool story. We'll keep everyone apprised if he ever gets that piece of the airplane back to Park Ridge.
Exactly, definitely. So, but anyway, it was great, kind of a fun show. I like doing it in the daytime. I just can say that.
I like the live portions, which we're missing too. I do like the live portions. This is good. And it has been, again, somewhat distracting to see everything and all the activity on here, but energizing as well.
Yes. Well, I hope you have a week full of very strong tailwinds.
And you have wonderfully blue skies.
Thank you very much.
Good night, everybody. Have a great week.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.